live to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 305, and we'll be talking with the folks from Stripling. It's a documentary, and I think you guys are going to enjoy what we have as a conversation today. Want to make a quick mention, patreon.com/thecultural hall. If you would like to be a Patreon subscriber of the Cultural Hall, you can find us there and fulfilling those Patreon promises all over the place. Just this week, for those that are Patreon subscribers, they got to see the video of myself and The Moth and the Flame, the band singing Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam. And the only way you can see that video is if you are a Patreon subscriber. So patreon.com/thecultural hall gets you part of that group. And while you're at it, while you're online doing things for the Cultural Hall, take a second and leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast. If it's iTunes or wherever it is, take a second and let people know what you love about it. If you don't like it, please keep that to yourself. My guest today... or rather, I should say guests, plural. I've got Mike Simkowiak, Craig Anderson, and Tom Laughlin. And the way this came about is I got an email from Tom that said, hey, you know what? I want to be on the show. And I said, all right. So now here we are, bright and early, and doing this episode 305. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you so much.
All right, so who wants to tell me what Stripling is? What is this documentary all about?
All right, I guess I'm in the hot seat.
All right.
So I'm Tom Laughlin. I'm the writer-director of Stripling.
And okay, now writer of a documentary seems like that should instantly be a narrative and not a documentary.
Exactly. You kind of have to write the film in the footage. You find the story and sift it and kind of get it structured. And so there is kind of a writing fluidity that happens in the documentary, unlike writing in film. But
okay.
But yeah, I guess I would say structuring it and getting it to where it has kind of a beginning and a middle and an end.
So. Okay. Okay. So not writing like we made this part up and then we got this happen, but so that we can see it and watch it and go, oh, that's
right.
Coherent thinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Directing and producing it and also editing it.
Okay. So, yeah. So tell me what it's about.
The documentary Stripling is basically a documentary that follows Mike Simkowiak, who is a professional bodybuilder and who happens to be LDS. And through this documentary, he pulls, along with Craig Anderson, pulls out some very cool spiritual parallels with not only physical bodybuilding, but spiritual strength and how that kind of like, how there's some similarities between building yourself up physically and also spiritually. So there's some of those parallels that are drawn out of this.
Yeah, it's the old sacrament talk, right? Like you build a muscle, you have to break it down, and then you build it up. Essentially, right?
Essentially.
I mean, I don't want to dumb it down, but it
exactly.
Sounds
like,
why are you doing this?
So a few years ago, I realized that, you know, my son, Connor, you know, is going to be 13 this year.
Oh, geez. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Buckle up.
the youth in my ward, and as well as Connor, you know, they just aren't going to listen to their dad and their bishop and their stake president. They want to aspire to be like their favorite athlete. They want to be just like their favorite action star.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, I got to have a vehicle to be able to convey something to my son and to youth out there that might be delivered in a different way, a way that may be a little more out of the ordinary. And so a few years ago, I was on a project, a freelance video editing or a video project with Mike. Mike was there. It was a health commercial, and we got to know each other. And he told me he was LDS, I was LDS, and I had just finished watching this documentary called Generation Iron,
mm-hmm.
which follows professional bodybuilders who compete at the end. And all these ideas were floating around, and I thought, okay, I think I have a springboard. And then I approached a good friend of mine, Craig Anderson, who's in my ward and who's interested in film and wanting to produce something. And we kind of all teamed up, and that's kind of how this all started.
So. All right. Well, so we'll pick up some pieces from the other guys. So, Mike, you are now responsible for the spirituality of Connor and all the other boys. Tom, I mean, joking kind of, but to me that's, you know, it's like, all right, good luck. How are we going to do this? How does that sound?
That's all right. You know, I like the... you know, to use that talent that I've built. You know, bodybuilding, it's an interesting thing. I always tell people, you know, you could walk past a person that might be the world's best pianist, violinist, but nobody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a bodybuilder, everywhere you go, it's funny, you know, people stare at you, you get attention. And so it's an interesting hobby where you get recognized, you know, and a lot of people look at you. And so I think it could be a great tool. You know, kids always, you know, who doesn't like somebody that's strong and big? I mean, everybody, like Tom said, all the action figures, you know, people look up to them just because of the strength, just their demeanor. So
I always like bodybuilders because I'm like, check this out. I can put my arms down and you can't. That's what, that's the one way I feel better than a bodybuilder, right? I'm here in my, as we're recording this, I'm in my, my clothes for going to the gym where I don't plan on being anything that anyone would like to look at, but I just don't want to buy new clothes. Like that's the goal for today. Joking aside though, so my brother did some amateur bodybuilding for a while, so I know it is not just like go and lift some weights and eat. It is very strict. It is very, talk about that for a minute.
You know, and that's the one thing that's awesome is the comparison from the physical to the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Is it's a lot of devotion. I mean, you have to have self-mastery. You have to have self-control. In a lot of ways, that appeals exactly to the spiritual side where, you know, you need to be strong. In bodybuilding, you know, it's an individual sport. You know, just like your own spirituality, it's you in you. You mm-hmm. know, when you stand on stage, when you stand Judgment Day, it's you.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I like is you can't blame anybody except yourself, you know, and so you stand accountable for your own actions.
Interesting kind of in that parallel, too, is you stand on the stage and you instantly know, oh, man, I probably should have worked that a little bit more, or, man, I probably could have done a little bit of this less or something like that.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool actually, like, comparing yourself, too. You know, spiritually, you might look at somebody in maybe your church and say, oh man, I wish I was like them. But it's not always as it seems. I mean, I've gone to the gym a few weeks before the shows and, you know, I'll look at a guy who I'm going up against and man, he looks good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's that final endure to the end where you get up there on stage and be like, I can't believe I was worried about this guy.
Yeah.
You know, so it really is you for yourself, just doing your best, doing, you know, dotting every I, crossing every T, and making sure you've done your part.
So let's talk to Craig real quick, and then I'm going to come back to you, Mike, about why you would do something like this to yourself, because I also know that it can be pretty trying and taxing. But Craig, they roped you into this whole thing. Tell me why.
Well, Tom approached me, asked me if I would like to fund his documentary.
Okay, so you got some pockets. Is that what
it
is?
He started off that way, and he said, "I'd like to do a documentary on bodybuilding." I said, "Look at me.
Yeah.
Do you suppose bodybuilding is something I'm really interested in?"
And you're like, he's like, Tom's like, "No, Craig, not about you. Listen, we've got somebody else. I just..."
And so ultimately, he says, "Tell me some stories." He says, "You have some stories about bodybuilders, and I've had some epiphanies, thoughts about spiritual strengths."
Mm-hmm.
And I was a Deacon Quorum advisor, and I was trying to impress my young men as to how to become great. We typically live in a world where everyone stereotypes everyone else and themselves.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah.
And we limit ourselves spiritually because we don't see the spiritual potential that lies within us. And I felt like this would be my way of being able to help people see that there's no limits spiritually. You are the only one who limits yourself.
Yeah.
You have unbelievable potential if you will just unleash it and condition yourself spiritually. You can be spiritually ripped, look like Mike does physically, but
yeah,
spiritually.
It's an interesting thing, something that I've certainly been thinking about, and if I'm being completely honest, struggling with that idea of self-limiting, right? We really do have the potential, as either Joseph Smith or Brigham Young would say, you know, to be gods, to be godlike, and yet I'm like, well, I don't even know if I can get out of bed today, and it's like, wait a minute, there's some sort of disconnect in all that.
Well, you know, just imagine a visual of being on the ocean, and the ocean is such a powerful force. You feel like, I'm powerless here.
Uh-huh.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
All you have to do is engage your mind and body to move toward a direction, and you can conquer the ocean. You see people swim the English Channel. A battleship without the motors going is just driftwood. And we're all driftwood unless we have a course and a direction, and that's what we need spiritually, is to be able to decide, this is where I want to be, and start moving in that direction spiritually.
Can we take a side note real quick? And I noticed this in the film, and I'm noticing this again. Craig is also really great with sincerity, but his eyes are just unreal as far as being both true and honest, and they're very beautiful eyes. And I'm just like, geez, what? I got to look somewhere else as we're doing this thing. But you'll notice that in the film. I noticed that square off in the film. Mike, let's go back to you real quick and talk about I mean, we talk about limits and stuff like that, and people obviously, as they're listening to this, they can't see what you look like. But let's just follow my description right now. You take a block of rock and you chisel it, and that's my and that's what you're looking at.
Thanks.
Have you always been like this? Been interested in health?
No, it's actually funny. You know, Craig talks about potential. You know, I started actually working out on my mission. When I left on my mission, I was 145 pounds.
Okay.
You know,
that's not very much.
6 foot tall, 145 pounds.
Wow.
And it's funny because I...
There was a good wind and it blew him over and yeah, he's like, exactly. I've got to do something different.
Yeah, that was wet too.
Yeah. You know. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
You know, but I wrote in my journal some lofty goals. And, you know, my arms were 10 inches and 3/4 around, just tiny. You know, and in my goal, I set goals and they were just unrealistic. But now I look at those goals and I'm just like, I can't believe that I thought that was almost unobtainable at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've surpassed that, you know, by a few inches. So
talk about where you served. Talk about that whole experience.
Yeah, I went to Sydney, Australia. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
are you from Utah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Grew up in Sandy, Utah. And
yeah, so that's completely different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Getting the call. Let's talk through it. We got time.
Yeah, I was real excited.
Nerdy kid? Were you a cool kid? You know, how did you come to access the mission?
No, I don't know as far as I thought I was cool.
Yeah.
You know? Right. I guess we all kind of do.
No, I'm cool. Yeah. You don't have any friends. No, but I'm still cool. I mean, yeah.
No, you know, I never had like a lot of really close friends. I had a few, but I was friends with everyone, you know,
okay.
Every group of friends, you know, the jocks, the athletes.
Did you do any, I mean, you mentioned you were 140 and nothing. Did you do athletics in?
I went to a public school. I got cut last tryout to the basketball. Then I went to a private school and, you know, and it was 1A. So I played all the sports and I was actually pretty good at basketball.
Nice. So. Yeah, sometimes you have to change the rules so that things work out better for you. Always wanted to go on a mission, or was there that trial right before you got the call?
All my brothers, I have three brothers, and they all went on missions. It was kind of, you know, what you do. But as it got closer, you know, my dad kind of sat me down and he said, look, if you don't believe this or, you know, you're not going to serve with all your heart, just, you know, I'd rather you not go. So it kind of came to the point where I had to really find out for myself, is this what I want to do? Is this the path I want to take for myself? So,
how'd you do that?
Just by, you know, like I said in the documentary, it was a lot of experiences. I don't think it was any one particular time, but it was the testimony I'd built over the years where, you know, I had this strong desire, you know, to do Heavenly Father's work, and I felt very confident about sharing, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints message to the people of Sydney. So I was really excited.
It's such an interesting thing. I've also been kind of reminiscing about that. It'll be 20 years this year that since I was called to serve, and I look back on it and it's like, yeah, I'm so ready to do it. And then sort of like bodybuilding or really any sort of goal, you go, wait a minute, there's this much work in this? What? I mean, altruistically, I thought I wanted to do this. Real quickly, you find out, okay, is this a thing that I'm really going to A, do, or B, be able to do? And, you know, of course, as we sit here and I talk about how I did serve, you know, we know the end. Spoiler alert, I did it. But yeah, it's funny how we get that kind of perception where we're like, yeah, you bet. But we just have no idea along the way. I want to take a break for a quick second. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this documentary and sort of the process of making it, what you guys learned in the process. I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but we'll get to go to know you guys from the Stripling documentary. More in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall with the guys from Stripling. It's a documentary that Mike Simkoviak, Craig Anderson, and Tom Laughlin all worked together on. Pretty cool, but I do want to get into some of this stuff. I know from witnessing, as I mentioned, my brother did some amateur bodybuilding for a little while. There are some, let's couch it in this, there are some issues within the bodybuilding industry, and I don't just mean... in some cases, some very serious health issues, right? In the way that people take care of their bodies and drugs and some of that. And I do want to get into that. But also, some would say maybe couch it in a modesty issue. Would you rather go the health concerns of bodybuilding or modesty? Mike, you pick it.
Bring it both. They sound like good topics.
Let's start with the health part of it. I know that there are some people that achieve... this sort of ripped or, you know, chiseled. They do it a natural and a clean and a healthy way. And then there are people who are like, you know what? I'm gonna put this in my veins and that'll make this easier. So open it up. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, that's a thing with any sport, you know, even in baseball, you know, cycling.
Are you meaning to tell me that there is drugging in baseball and cycling?
I've heard something like that. You know, everybody wants to push it to the limit. And one thing with bodybuilding is it's almost accepted because, you know, this is a sport where people don't go to say, wow, look how healthy those people are. They go for the wow aspect of it. You know, so you look at some of these professional level bodybuilders and what they've obtained is just insane. You know, nowadays there are so many drugs, there are so many supplements out there that can completely change your physique. You know, but you're going to have that issue in any sport.
Sure.
You know, so it's kind of your personal choice where you stand. I mean, there's great baseball players, there's great cyclists that, you know, never touch it. Same thing with bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a personal choice and you have to kind of realize where you stand. That's one thing with this industry is you have to know where you stand.
How did you get to where you stand?
You know, it just depends. I just trained hard. I worked hard. Like I said, when I started on my mission, the concept of you can do this, you know, on my mission, obviously, I was eating and working out, and I excelled. I came home. I had 30 pounds of lean muscle, you know, so it was possible. You know, the problem is I think everybody wants the shortcut because they don't realize it's possible to do it with hard work.
Right.
You know, that's the easy way out this day is, oh, hey, I'm going to take this and next week I'll be big. I mean, even sure, take that, you still have to put in the work. You know?
Right. But you definitely see that kind of stuff, yeah?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So what about the modesty part of it?
Again, it's where you stand. You're going to be in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, nowadays everybody has a phone. You can see something, you can see an immodest picture in 2 seconds. So you've got to set boundaries. You know, you're going to be out there. You can be in the world, but not of the world.
You know, just a quick aside. I can't remember if it was a meme or if someone was telling me this, but they were talking about giving their child a phone. And I think the kid was like 8 or 9 and... I want to say, it must have been someone telling me this story, but anecdotally, it was a dad telling another dad, and it's like, well, is your son ready to have access to the filthiest of pornography and, you know, images and having the ability to be able to search whatever he wants? And the dad was like, no. And he's like, well, then don't get him a phone. If he's not ready for that, that's what that thing is. I just think that that's funny that we, you know, we sort of... like you talk about, you know, we're in the world. We have to be ready for it. There's not going to be a way that we can not have that be around us, but it very much is. It is that core strength. Just to speak a little bit more about it, like when you go to these bodybuilding competitions, and the women, they're wearing pretty. I always tickle at the word scantily clad. I think that's kind of funny, but they're. To me, there is not a thing that's attractive about that. Like, I just am like, that is a uniform for this so they can be able to show. But the guys as well, I mean, you're not wearing altogether that much.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because one thing about it is perception.
Uh-huh.
You know, like even when people say, wait, LDS bodybuilder, how does that go?
Right.
But what if you were to look at a swimmer?
Right.
They're wearing the same size of trunks.
Right.
But it's just the perception people see. You know, the problem that comes across with bodybuilding is the vanity. People think, oh, you're vain, you're selfish because you're so engaged in your own body. Well, I doubt that any Olympic swimmer or any other Olympic athlete spends less time than a bodybuilder. You know, it's dedication. It's a sport, you know, and it's part of it. It's just kind of the perception that people have.
But how do you fight the perception? Because that really is the thing, right? Like, I'm sure that, I mean, we go Michael Phelps. I'm sure that he spends probably more time, no offense to you, but probably more time making sure that there's all that. And then when he performs, quote unquote, you know, he's not wearing too much of trunks, but he doesn't get the bad rap of, you know, why are you being so immodest and all these things? Whereas you get up and we go, ugh, oh, there he goes, being vain again. How do you deal with that? That's got to be frustrating.
You know, I think it's evolving, you know, especially bodybuilding. It was such a, you know, a minority, you know, especially when it started. You know, look at Arnold, and back in those days, there were so few people doing it. So the perception people, you know, with the drugs, the immodesty, it's kind of continued, but it's been great with social media because you see there's all these people out there that, you know, they've built great physiques. And that's why I think Tom approached me as, hey, wait, you know, you have a standard, you do the sport. It's not what people always perceived of bodybuilding.
It's interesting to me the way that social media in this aspect has kind of broken it down. I'll ask you this. When you get up in the trunks, are you a little bit embarrassed, or are you like, nah, I got this and I want to show?
No, it's funny because if I were to go to a pool, I would never wear that.
Yeah.
But it's because everybody's wearing that. You know, it's not that you're going with the crowd. It's because it's the sport. It's part of it where you don't look at one guy and be like, why is he wearing those small trunks? But I you know, I would go to a pool and wear normal board shorts where I'd feel completely out of place if I was wearing a Speedo there.
Yeah. Nuts and bolts of bodybuilding is what I want to talk about real quick right now, because I don't know that everyone knows it. The reason there's a purpose why both the men and the women wear very little. Talk about that.
Yeah, just so you can see the structure of the body, you know, it's a complete package. All the muscles, you know, it's judged on symmetry, proportions, muscularity, and size. And so, you know, if you're covering half your body, it's hard to see, you know, maybe your legs. If you're wearing full shorts, you can't see your quads, hamstrings, glutes, you know, a lot of that muscle structure that you've taken time to build.
What's your day-to-day like?
As far as lifting and things like that, you know, most of the time it's, you know, just getting in meals. For me, like, I was really skinny, so I have a fast metabolism. For me, it's always trying to, you know, keep that size, so it's constantly eating, you know.
And what are we talking? In the thousands?
Yeah, yeah.
4,000, 5,000. Give me numbers. Give me specifics.
I wish I was consistent with that. You know, it's difficult. And that's why it's challenging. And with spirituality, it's like you can't just show up a week before and say, all right, I'm going to start training for this. It's, right. You know, what I'm doing now, I'm prepping actually right now for a show in Pittsburgh, but it's in August, you know, September. You start now, just like your spirituality. If you want to be strong, you want to be ripped spiritually, it's going to take time. It's not going to just happen overnight.
And so I want to know this. Are we talking 3,000, 4,000? Give me a number here.
Let's see. So we're talking probably 4,500 every day.
Okay. Yeah. That's a lot of calories.
Yeah.
And then gym time, what are we looking at there?
About an hour 15. You know, I'm a firm believer if you just want to get in there, shock the muscle, hit it and leave. You know, some people are there for 4 hours.
And, right.
You know, it's...
I think that's the thing that's surprising to people is they think they're just sort of muscle hounds, right? Like, how does Mike even have a job? How does he take care of his family if I mean, really, right? Oh, I'm sure you get that perception, but doable.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like I said, it's just discipline. You know, are you taking time? Like spirituality, are you taking time to build it? Are you taking time? Are you investing? You know, I just started working full time for a supplement company. It's interesting because I always had clients say, I don't have time, I'm at work. Well, now that I'm sitting at a desk for once in my life, I'm like, this is actually easy.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes a little prep and I sit there at a desk, I can eat while I work. You know, I mean, obviously some jobs you can't, but, you know, it's just that preparation.
I like something that you said in there, in that you just kind of get in and shock the muscle. And I think that there's something to this spiritual and obviously... And Stripling, the documentary, deals with all of this, but there's something about just being prepped and ready to like study the gospel or to read your scriptures or something like that, where you kind of put everything aside and like you do at the gym, you're there, you do the thing, and then you leave. You can kind of get in and go, scriptures, I'm going to do this, I'm going to study. There's not any distractions. And in that purity of time, it doesn't have to be your whole life. You don't have to be the scriptorian. You can get in, get the meat of it, and then get out. So I like that. So, Tom, I want to go back to you. You said that a couple years ago is when you contacted Mike about doing this, and then we got Craig in his pockets to get in. Just teasing, Craig. to get in on this documentary. How come it took so long? Or did it take so long?
So it took about 3 years. We followed Mike through a series of, I think it was about a year off and on filming as he was prepping for a show. We shot the interviews in a day or so. And then over a series of months, we would kind of hit and miss with Mike and just kind of give the audience a sense of the day in the life. And then as he got ready for this show, I can't spoil it, but, you know, he gets on stage. And so we had to kind of strategically plan certain key moments in that year. And then it took about a year and a half to 2 years just editing. You know, life gets in the way.
Sure.
Things get busy. But overall, I'm pleased with how it turned out. But there were some interesting experiences filming it, following Mike around and you know, not knowing what to expect. And backstage, there was a situation where Mike was backstage prepping for a show. And here, you know, as was mentioned earlier, here are all these women in bikinis walking around. And, yeah. You know, being able to have some exclusive access, not only to Mike's, you know, inner life, but also, you know, in bodybuilding, when he was preparing for a show, we were able to get exclusive access mm-hmm. behind the scenes and things like that. So there's some cool things in the documentary that that we show
that people can
that people can kind of get a sense of the,
yeah.
You know, so
Craig, I want to come back to you again. How do you feel? Tom came to you and said, "Hey, what do you think? You want to do this? Are you glad you came on board? Is this a fun ship to be on?"
Oh, it's been amazing. It's been a lot of fun.
Tell me what you've learned.
Well, first off, I've learned that things aren't always as they seem.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, you know, you shoot a lot of film, and the final product has an awful lot left on the editing floor. And some of that stuff on the editing floor you thought was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And it was.
Yeah.
But the final product is just exactly what I had in mind, and I think it's exactly what people need to hear. I'm proud of it. I'm willing to put my name on it and feel good about it.
Now, how much did each of you, besides Tom, have input as far as like how the story goes? Or was Tom like, get out of the editing room, I'm taking care of this?
Well, Mike and I each brought our own strengths.
Uh-huh.
And Tom is really gifted in asking the right questions and kind of formulating it all together and building a good story around it. He's just a real master. So we just kind of followed his lead to a large extent because he had a clear direction of what he wanted to do and was able to capitalize on each of our strengths and pull it all together into a real remarkable product.
Now, Craig, you mentioned that this was your kind of first foray into film and this kind of stuff. What do you do professionally?
I tell people I sell drugs.
Okay.
I used to be a pharmaceutical rep for about 40 years.
That's what I figured. Although you never know, right?
Well, the primary president when I was a bishop used to say, "Bishop, don't tell the primary kids you sell drugs. Tell them you're a salesman, but don't tell them you sell drugs.
Please do me a favor as they look up to you in an ecclesiastical way." But are you retired then? Is that what that sounds like?
Yes, I'm retired now.
Now, how do you like that?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah?
Days are so full, I don't know if I've ever had time to go to work.
It's interesting like that. Talking to my dad's at that point where he's seeing that bit of retirement on the horizon, and he's like, yeah, I got to retire because I've got so much to do.
That's so true.
A mission in the future for you, Brother Anderson?
Well, you know, I certainly would like to go on another mission. I served in France my first time around, but I have a son who has Down syndrome.
Okay.
Who is actually married to a little Downs girl.
Oh, cool.
And every other month they rotate from our house to her parents' house. So right now our mission is kind of be there for them and be their support.
That's an interesting and really, you know, for all intents and purposes is a mission, right? You're helping this further of life. That's awesome.
Well, we'll find some things locally to do, and we're kind of making that transition at this point.
Plus, you got to, I mean, with the involvement in this film, I know you expressed you're going to start bodybuilding yourself in this.
Absolutely. Look at me.
In this time of life.
I'm a diamond in the rough.
Sure. Listen, he started thin and scrawny. I mean, I'm not to say that you were thin or scrawny, but there is certainly hope.
Well, you know what? I look at this. Someone who's like Mike, you walk out physically, and you know that you're... No one's going to mess with you.
Uh-huh.
That you're pretty much in control of your life, and you've got that sense of power and control.
Uh-huh.
Well, I feel like maybe spiritually that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
People may not see it like they see with Mike, but I know it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I can go to battle any day that I have to.
Right.
And that I'm prepared to carry on the work spiritually, and that I may not look that way physically, but spiritually I'm working toward that.
You know, I like that you kind of bring that up, and maybe this is where Tom was going to go. The name of the film is Stripling, and we haven't even addressed the elephant in the room that we're talking about stripling warriors, right?
Right.
I'm not
yeah.
deducing something mm-hmm. incorrect. How come you decided to pick that, Tom?
So, you know, Craig and I were in the same ward for many years, and Craig is, I want to just say, you know, Craig is like the Obi-Wan Kenobi for a lot of young men, and not just in the ward, but in different stakes. And so that's why I really felt that it was a good balance with Mike and Craig in the documentary. But one of the things that we always used to talk about was Arnold Freeberg's artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of made that a part of the documentary. And
for people who don't know who Arnold Freeberg is, he, if you look in the... for many, many years in the Book of Mormon, the 10 or 11 pictures that are within it, those are Arnold Freeberg paintings that the church essentially just made those prints within your Book of Mormon. So it's always the shredded Captain Moroni, the, you know, the keto Nephi that you're just like, oh, that guy is ripped from head to toe.
Yeah. And it seems like a lot of people say, well, stripling doesn't actually mean strong and ripped.
Mm-hmm.
It means youthful. It means young. These 2,000 stripling warriors were young. But, you know, when I grew up, stripling to me meant spiritually ripped.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Craig talks a little bit more about it in the documentary. But
no spoils.
So sorry about that.
I'm just teasing.
But the Arnold Freeberg artwork, there's a lot more there than just nice artwork. So
yeah.
Well, also, you think eternally, we are all a stripling. We're just infants. So... in that regard, we all are stripling warriors.
I like the yin and yang of the two of you, too. Where it, I mean, which isn't to say that you're not a strong person physically, Craig, and which isn't to say that you're not a strong spiritual person, Mike, but there very much is, like, just in the looks, but also in kind of speaking to each of you guys, you know to which point you really hit. Mike, I want to go back to you real quick. You are essentially I don't want to say a pawn because that sounds sort of condescending or whatever, right? But Tom really has said to you, hey, be an example. Do you feel like you accomplished that through this?
I hope so. You know, like I said, the first is it'd be awesome to use this talent that I have, you know, bodybuilding, whether you see it as a hobby or I see it as a talent, something that I can share. You know, if I can inspire youth to see, hey, I can, you know, not only appeal to the physical side, but you can also be spiritually strong. You don't need to just be one or the other. So,
yeah. I want to take a break for a second. When we come back in the third block, there's three questions that I ask everyone who steps here into the cultural hall. So I want to ask those of you, and then a few pickup questions that we've got. We'll come back and do that in the third block of the cultural hall. Hey, you guys, I want to talk to you about bestdjinutah.com. Why, that's the company that I have started for doing my DJing weddings and live events. Whatever you need, I am your guy to do it. So whether you're a lifer or a convert to this podcast show, or you just happen to be listening for the first time, if you are in need of a wedding DJ or an MC for your event, or just a DJ for your business opening, go to bestdjinutah.com. Now, I know it says Utah, but guess what? If you want me to come to your event and you're not in Utah, I'll do that too. You're going to have to pay for me to be there, but I'm more than willing to do that as well. It's bestdjinutah.com. Emails there, phone numbers there. Would love to hear from you and then help you make your event that much better. Look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for supporting the Cultural Hall podcast. But it's a show. You knew that.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. The 2019 PC Laptops SMT2 laptop has arrived just in time for back to school. It's crafted from high quality aluminum, powered by a super powerful Intel quad-core processor. It's hand-built right here in the USA in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's so powerful, it'll be your best friend helping you get through school or running your business. My goal was to find a laptop that performed like a $2,000 laptop for under $1,000, and I found it with the PC Laptops SMT2. I've got a limited batch right now for $999. That's right, $999. And it comes with a lifetime service guarantee. You don't have to call some 800 number in Chumbawamba. You'll get real human beings face-to-face to take care of you forever for free. So just get into any one of our locations right now and grab a lifetime warranty laptop for $999 while supplies last. Check us out at PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, we love you.
Here in the third block of the Cultural Hall, I recognized that we have not said, where can people see this or can they see it yet?
So right now, it's available on a website called streamlit.com.
Streamlit?
Streamlit.com. Okay. And just like, you know, any other online streaming platform, Hulu, Netflix, whatever, you can sign up for a free 2-week trial and then cancel anytime.
So get in, watch the movie, get out. Got it.
And we're also working with a couple of people to get it available via direct download.
Cool.
And hopefully over the next couple of weeks, we'll have more on that.
And I know on the poster, I think I saw LDS Film Festival. Is it showing there or did it show there?
So, yes, it was accepted. It's going to be playing at the LDS Film Festival, which runs, I believe, February 28th through March 1st.
So people have a chance to be there.
Right.
Will you guys be on hand for people to meet? And awesome.
So we're in the short documentary category, Competition 2, and our Q&A and our film will premiere at the festival March 1st at 1 p.m.
Cool.
On Friday.
Now, when you say short, how long then is the film?
So it's categorized by a length. So this film is about 40 minutes, I believe, 40, 45 minutes. And so within the film festival criteria, that qualifies it as a short documentary.
Sure.
Anything longer than 50, 60 minutes is considered a feature.
Yeah. You know what I hear about when you say that? That is a Sunday school lesson now, since we only have 2-hour church. You get a 40-minute movie in and out. Boom.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Smart thinking, gentlemen. Yep. I know that.
Yeah.
Whether it was coincidental or inspired coincidence, that's not a bad plan. People can obviously check that out there, called Stripling. Anything that surprised any of you guys along the way? I'll open that question to any of you. As you were making this, something that we learned about Mike or about the industry or about yourselves as you were doing this, any sort of pickup things that you learned along the way?
When I was editing the footage, going through, and as Mike said, and Craig, there's so many good stories that they share, so many good comments, and it could have been a 5-hour documentary, but
people don't watch 5-hour documentaries. No offense. They're like, oh, this is great, but seriously, 5 hours? Could we not have edited anything?
Yeah. Mike talks a lot about his upbringing, and it really stuck with me how dedicated his parents were with Family Home Evening, and just, you know, the lack of digital devices and distractions. Really kind of rooted him in a good way that then springboarded him later on where he is right now. And I really feel, a thanks, they're not here, but the thanks given to his mom and his dad for just being good examples and being dedicated and consistent in gospel teaching and bringing him up. And also with Craig working with the young men in such a unique way. Being very much a storyteller and not just a doctrinal dictator, but a storyteller. So
look at that. I think he likes you guys.
Did a great
Scary,
job.
Scary, isn't it?
Did a great job.
I don't know about you, Craig. When you walked in, I was like, those eyes, those deceiving eyes. Mike, do you have a wife, kids? What's your situation?
I'm currently going through divorce right now.
Oh, I asked the wrong question at the wrong time. Sorry to hear. As one who has been through that, let me just offer this thing. You'll be okay.
Yeah.
Whatever okay means, you'll be that.
Yep. You know, sometimes, you know, we can't control the hand we're dealt, you know.
Sure.
We just have to play it. And, you know, I'm glad for every opportunity. You know, I've learned a lot, and, you know, that's what life is about, is learning.
Yeah. It's amazing going through that situation and the lessons that I learned looking back. It's tough, man. I can't tell you the amount of times where I just was like, what? Why? I thought we had a deal, God. I thought we were on the same page. But coming out on the other side, seeing, how in a lot of ways I don't feel like I was being true to myself, that there was that ultimate plan of happiness within her and I, and just allowing that opportunity for each of us to be happy was hard when I realized that meant that, you know, it was two different paths. But yeah, you, you'll be okay. Plus, it gives you a little extra oomph sometimes at the gym. The best shape of my life was right as I was coming. I'll show you a picture. I'm actually proud of it.
Nice.
Now, gentlemen, there are three questions that we ask everyone who step into the cultural hall. And I'll ask those of you right now. I'm assuming that none of you know what they are, so I'm excited about that. The first question is, sort of a softball question, is do you have a calling right now in your ward? And if so, what is it? And we can go in the same order, so whoever wants to start, we'll start with each question. Tom, you want to start? You have a calling?
Well, I'm the 11-year-old scout, assistant scout leader, but because of the whole shift with the deacons now, All of our deacons are gone. So I don't know what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, 11-year-old scouts.
Okay.
I'm currently teaching the primary. I teach the 7-year-olds getting ready for baptism.
Oh, cool. What a fun age.
They are amazing. I love those kids.
Yeah, if I had to teach a kid, it would be a 7-year-old.
They are truly a gift.
Nice. Mike?
I'm actually in the process of moving now, so I don't. My last calling was gospel doctrine teacher.
Okay.
And that was funny because I'd always get comments like, hey, come to our gospel doctrine class. Look at this guy. You know, he's got a faux hawk bodybuilder and he's teaching gospel doctrine, you know. But I really like to teach people, you know, on my mission. That was one thing I enjoyed, you know, as district leader, zone leader, is, you know, teaching people so that they can understand the concepts that are, you know, in the gospel and in the scriptures. So
little posters around his ward where it's like, come to gospel doctrine or else. The next question is if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists within the church or make one up that doesn't exist at all, what calling would you pick? And Tom's shaking his head back and forth. So if one of you guys know the answer first, you guys can answer. It can be one that you've had before. It can, like I say, be one that exists. Or you can be like, you know, the perfect calling for me would be and make something up. What would it be? Craig, you're biting at it. Let's go for it.
You know, I got the chance to serve almost 10 years in the Council from the State Presidency. I think that was probably my favorite calling in, that I could feel like I could impact the most number of lives, and the State President still had to make all the heavy lifting decisions. I could be supportive, be understanding, and give him a hard time. But when the final word came down, he was the one who got the revelation. But it was a great opportunity to be able to go visit people in their homes and to represent the Lord. It was amazing. I felt invincible. Wherever I went, there was never once I had any fear or concern because I knew that the Lord had my back.
Cool.
That I could just walk into any situation and it would be all right, and it always was. Hmm. And it was a remarkable experience. So
cool.
I would suggest make your position that way where you feel invincible. You know the Lord's got your back, and regardless what comes down the road, you got it.
I feel like you guys shouldn't let Craig go first because I'm interested to see what you have to say. Just giving you a hard time. What do you think, Tom or Mike? Which one do you guys want to go?
I enjoyed, when I first got married, we were in primary for several years, and I miss the primary so much. My wife was primary chorister. And, you know, you feel like after a while you're losing brain cells. You know, I was kind of like the designated primary bouncer, keeping kids kind of corralled. But I love the primary. The spiritual strength that those kids have is just unbelievable. You find that you learn more from them than
the old cliche. Really,
that really is the
shooting
old cliche.
Me straight. That's really
no. It really is. But I there's not that expectation to comment and make sure your comment is scripturally bad. The acceptance in primary is 100%. And there's hugging. They run up to, and they hug you. There's class. You can actually like stay awake in primary. And
you have
songs
to, otherwise,
are great.
Who knows?
You know, and there's, you know, you just, I think that would be where I'd love to go back.
Cool. So. All right, Mike, it's to you.
For me as a fitness trainer, one of the you know, a pretty awesome thing is when, you know, years later you have somebody come up to you and say, you changed my life, you know, and you're looking at them like, oh, I really did.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, in the church, that would be an awesome thing, is have somebody come up to you and say, because of what you taught me or your example. I mean, there was people, you know, 20 years ago, I still remember certain individuals in the ward that I grew up that impacted my life, you know, and I think about them here and there just because of their example. And so that's any calling that I could you know, do the same for somebody else would be a great, you know, great feeling and an honor.
That's cool. It is interesting like that too, right? Like some of the, I remember some of my youth leaders, the young men leader were the ones for me. And I remember thinking about it now and being like, well, I wonder what he even does for a living. And I think now, you know, if we were to be in the same ward now, I don't know that I would likely be friends with that person just because our interests are so varied. But because, you know, I knew he cared about me there, I can think of one or two that like I would go to their house when talking to mom and dad was not the thing, but just being like, hey, leader, you know, help me out with this. And they were very much formative as far as that stuff goes. The last question we ask everyone that steps here into the cultural hall is, what is your favorite part of your faith? And however you interpret that, however you would like to answer that, it can be completely up to you. But what is your favorite part of your faith? Craig's going for it.
All right. For me, I guess I've gone through a lot of bumps in through life, and some have said, well, you've got life so easy. You know, I just can't even imagine. You can't even relate to where I've been.
Mm-hmm.
And I just smile. They have no idea the bumps of life I've gone through, and my faith is what's held me strong. To know that I know, I once had an interview with, we had Elder Ballard come to our stake, and we asked, we had been visiting with him as a stake presidency. And he says, okay, your brother, do you have any questions you'd like to ask?
Mm-hmm.
The stake president goes, because he knows I have a loose cannon.
Yeah.
So I asked him a question. I said, Elder Ballard, do you ever question if the church is true? Stake president goes, I mean, most people wouldn't ask an apostle that question.
I don't know.
Without a pause, he says, of course I question. We all question. The difference is that I know that I know.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to question. Just know that you know. And that pretty much sums up my faith. I know that I know. And so no matter what happens, that faith is always there. I just know that I know.
I love it. And I love the idea of asking an apostle, yeah, do you question? And the stake president just being like, come on, Craig, what are we doing here? Why are we asking? Anyway, go ahead, Tom.
So I'm actually not from Utah, I'm from Kansas. My parents are converts. So our gospel learning in the home was like my favorite part about my the gospel is that you can, when I was growing up, my parents, well, we don't know the answer to your question, so you're going to have to read it and find out, whether it's, you know, in A Marvelous Work and a Wonder, one of these publications, or the Ensign, or in the scriptures. But just that ability for my parents to constantly direct me, mm-hmm. to find out for yourself, to learn, you know, brush up on this, learn about that. And they could have easily, in most cases, probably answered. And, you know, I think sometimes I feel like I'm doing that with my kids and not giving them enough opportunities to kind of let them swim on their own a little. But that's my favorite part of the gospel is that the Lord expects me to be constantly learning, constantly questioning, constantly growing, and to whatever end. But yeah, that's my favorite part is the ability. We're not like with the Bible and it's that. We've got the standard works. We've got all these different resources. Gospel learning is endless.
Mm-hmm.
There's no end to it. And that's what my favorite part about the gospel is it's so vast and it's just ongoing.
Cool. All right, Mike, bring us home.
All right. My favorite part, you know, is the simplicity of it. You know, a lot of people get caught up in religion, technicalities,
mm-hmm.
where to me, it's really, who are you? You know, who are you becoming? And, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has really grounded me, you know, where I want to help people. I want to do more out of kindness, you know, become a better person. And so that's kind of my favorite part is it's helped me become better, I guess.
Yeah. The film is called Stripling, and people can see it at the LDS Film Festival March 1st at 1 p.m.
Yep.
You can see it right now at Streamlit. It's streamlit.com.
Uh-huh.
You can get a free, although I'm sure they would love you to continue to remain a subscriber, you can get a 2-week trial, check out the movie, and then no longer renew your trial of that to be able to see it. It's about 40 minutes long. It's a spiritually ripped documentary. And my guests have been Tom Laughlin, the writer-director, Craig Anderson, the Pockets Man, and spiritual giant behind this film, and Mike Simkoviak, who our very own Captain Moroni, I think, Can we call you that?
I don't know.
you should see
setting the bar high.
You should see how uncomfortable he got as soon as I said that. He kind of shifting and looking around going, oh, don't put that on me. The film Stripling. Thanks, you guys, for being here. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat.